Okay, today's daf is daf samach. We're going to start in Nun Tet Amabet from the words Amar Rav Matna. No? Yeah, Amar Rav Matna. Okay, about the Beit HaKnesset, we're going to talk about the Kohen having first rights to things. Okay, again, Eloi Nishmachan about the Tara Rezal Batzara, and the Refresh Lemot Vora Batina, Ozabram Shulam Ben Chana, Karmipa Nima, Orli Pnea, Barachel, Frida Chaim, Alka Esther, Bat Sipora, Daniel Ben Mirim Chayarut, Yosef Ben Rachel, Leah, Bar Rivka, Rafal, Yoshua, Falak Ben Bracha, Batia, Yenta Mirim Bat Chana, Rachel, Yel Mirim Bat Chaya, Rina Chaya, Bat Shoshana, Eliezer Chaim Ben Drezi, Yaakov Ben Rosa. Okay, so we left off yesterday about the fact that we needed to institute a hierarchy of who gets the first aliyah, and then it related to some other things also about the seudah, and then we ended with saying that if in the seudah, or in terms of giving food to somebody first, you can be mevater, you know, change the kavod, but when it comes to the Beit HaKnesset, you can change it, and it has to be in this order, in order to prevent people from getting upset. I was thinking yesterday about this a lot, that they instituted this whole system, and yet you still see that people get upset if, you know, because again, there's between different Kohanim, and you know, it becomes an issue that there are always those people who get very offended by not having gotten the first Aliyah or not having gotten. So despite the fact that they instituted this system, it obviously doesn't prevent every kind of disappointment on the part of the people and, you know, tensions. Okay, Amar Rav Matna, Hata Amarik Bebeit HaKnesset, Lo, the fact that we said the Bebeit HaKnesset, you can't change it, and it has to be that the Kohen goes first, Lo Amaran Ela B'Shabbatot V'Yamim Tovim, D'Shchichei Rabim, Ava B'Sheni V'Chamishi Lo. Okay, we don't pask in this way, but he says that this really only applies on Shabbatot and Yamim Tovim, where there's a lot of people in shul, as opposed to Sheni and Chamishi, which, by the way, shows that people didn't go to shul every day, right? Sheni and Chamishi, where there's less people in shul, there's less of an issue of all the people getting upset about who gets first. So it's not an issue. So then they say, Ini, is that really true? V'harav huna kare b'kone b'shabte v'yamim tovim. Now, they're not talking about the part that's not true that we thought, that we don't hold by. They're saying the opposite. Does it really mean that on Shabbaton and Yamim Tovim, you can't do it? Okay, that you can't switch around. We see that Rav Huna read, okay, he got the first Aliyah, and he wasn't a Kohen on Shabbaton and Yamim Tovim. So what do they say? Shani Rav Huna da filu Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Ase Kohane Chashive de Eretz Yisrael. Sorry, Rabbi Ami Rav Asi were Kohanim, who were Chashuvim in Eretz Yisrael. Mecha Pavu Chayfele. They were still subservient to Rav Huna.
We said earlier that a Gadol B'Torah could go first in place.
Right, so that's what we're seeing now, that a Gadol B'Torah, okay, obviously we don't do this nowadays anymore, but in those days it was still somewhat fluid, and what they're saying is that there could be a situation where someone is so much more of a Gadol, and everyone agrees with it, that he could actually go first. Amar Abai. Okay, all sorts of interesting halachot now about this. Naktinan, we have a masoret that says, Ein sham kohen nitparda ha-chavila. Okay, there's different opinions about what this means. Okay, one of the opinions means, there's no more, if there's no kohen in shul, then everything, like, everything is, disappears, meaning, it's not like Levi gets the first aliyah instead of him. Okay, in other words, it's a free-for-all at that point. Okay, it doesn't work anymore. There's a few different interpretations, but we'll go with that one. But Amar Abaye, Naktina, and Abaye says also, it's been passed down, Ein Sham Levi Kore Kohen. Okay, if there's no Levi, a Kohen reads in his place. Ini, is that really true? Bahama Rabbi Yochanan, Kohen Achar Kohen Lo Yikra Mishum Pigmo Shavishon. Levi Achar Levi Lo Yikra Mishum Gam Shnehem. We're going to have a few questions on the statement, but first let's get the statement before we understand exactly what it all means. But if a Kohen goes up for the first Aliyah, another Kohen can't come after him, because what are we worried about? The people will say that the first Kohen wasn't really a Kohen. Okay? And that the other Kohen is coming, so what's the concern? The other Kohen is coming instead of him. In other words, they brought him up, and then maybe it came to their attention he wasn't good, so someone else did it in his place.
Well, yeah. Weren't they also reading themselves in those days? It was before the Institute.
Yeah, fast. So also it could be the reader was reading all of the Torah, and therefore, so what would be the relevance of
one Kohen couldn't read as well as the other? or if a lady
could read it. No, but they're not worried about embarrassment. They're worried that maybe he's really not a Kohen. Pgam means it's not the kavod of the Kohen. It's the pgam. It's saying that there's something wrong with his kahuna. There's an issue.
I don't understand why that's a concern. That's what the Gemara is saying.
Right. We're going to talk about it a little bit more.
Serving in the Beit HaMikdash and they're just getting an aliyah.
Right. So first of all, there seems to be all sorts of concerns about people who, like one of the reasons they say for Nitparda Chavila is that people are worried that if they see a Levi go up first, then they're going to think that Levi's a Kohen.
That I can see.
So if they just say it's a free-for-all, then there's less of a concern.
So even saying if a Kohen goes after a Kohen, oh, we're worried that the first Kohen has a
so you'll see that. So you'll see that in a minute they're gonna say that this is only in a particular case.
Same way it's known now and it's just accepted. I mean, if they were there after the Beit HaMikdash and they weren't serving the Beit HaMikdash, it's just known, genealogy is known.
Who's not necessarily.
It doesn't make a difference. If somebody says he's a Kohen.
You could claim it doesn't make a difference, but also. You have to know who's a Kohen in terms of marrying off your children, and that's very important to them because you can't, they can't marry Grusha, they can't marry. So it was important to keep the Yichus, like who's what. And also, there was a level of respect in the community. So if you turned out people had a safek about your kahuna, that would be a big embarrassment for you. So, yeah.
When you were called up, it wasn't like today where...
They would say Kohen, or they would say... Where they call you up as a Kohen. Right. So then they talk about that also in the Parshaniyot, that, they would say it, but still not everybody listens. Okay. It's interesting, by the way, to think about in this... things, since the whole thing is what people will perceive, it's a matter of what things people would notice and what things they wouldn't notice and what they might conclude from what they might or might not notice. But anyway, that's why you could argue with a bunch of these things about what human nature is and what people might get confused by or not. Anyway, there's already something that's going to confuse the Gemara here, which is, so Kohen Achar Kohen can't read, okay? So the second Oleh can't be a Kohen because, a different Kohen, because of the Pgam of the Rishon. We're worried he's going to make a Safek on the first guy. Levi achar Levi lo yikra. Okay, so the third aliyah, let's say, can't be a Levi if one Levi already read, because mishum pgam shnehem. We're worried about the pgam of both of them. So why in the Kohen are we only worried about the first, and then the Levi we're worried about both? So we'll see. So first, let's relate to our question. So how could you say if ain Levi, then the Kohen and a Kohen reads, because a Kohen can't come up after a Kohen? So what do they answer? Ki kamrina boto Kohen. They mean that the same Kohen gets both aliyot, and that's what we in fact do. Okay? So now they say, Maishna, now they want to ask about this line. Maishna Levi achar Levi ikap gam shnehem, da amri chabinai ulav Levi, who? Kohen achar Kohen, nami amri chabinai ulav Kohen, who? Okay? In other words, if the Levi were worried that they're going to say either one or the other is problematic, so with the Kohen they should also say either one or the other. So what do they say? Kigon. It's a case where we know for sure about the second guy that his father was a Kohen, and that's why we're only worried about the first one having the pgam. So then they say, wait a minute, you can say the same thing about the Levi, right? So then they say, Dahai Sheni Kohen. So Hachinami, Demuchzach Lam Bavua, Dahai Sheni De Levi. You can say the same thing about the Levi. So Ela Amre Mamzeridu Nitina Nasiv Upasle Lizare. What could be the psul by the Levi? The psul could be that he married a Mamzeridu Nitina, in which case he'd have to lose his Levia status, his Levi status, and he'd be like a regular Yisrael. So Hachanami Amru Grusha Uchaluta Nasiv Va'achle Lizare. If that's the concern, right, that it was Mamzeret and Netina, what's the concern by a Kohen? A Grusha Chalutza. So you could say just because you know the father is a Kohen doesn't mean that this guy didn't marry a Grusha or a Chalutza, right? It doesn't, just because your father is doesn't mean you still are. You are by birth, but you could mess it up. So likewise, you can mess it up by Lilavia. So why is it, again, that Levi Achar Levi were worried about Gam in both the first and the second guy who come up, but a Kohen Achrei Kohen, we're only worried about the pgam of the first guy.
Why are we worried about losing your kahuna? Because no one's allowed to marry a mamzer. I mean, that's just fair.
No, so this is the thing. Okay, so first of all, what's important to note is, we're going to see this in a minute, if you are a mamzer, you can still be Ole LeTorah.
Yeah,
okay? You can't marry, but you can be Ole LeTorah. But what happens? You lose your Levia status. Now, if you're a Kohen and you marry a Grusha, you lose your Kahuna status and you lose your Levia status. In other words, you can't be called up as a Kohen or as a Levi, because obviously Kohenim are part of Shevet Levi. So you can't be called up for either. So now they're saying that's obviously the problem for both. So now what do they say? Sof Levi mikahave. So now what's the issue? That even though... wait a second.
Would his son be considered a Levi?
So this... Okay, wait. Confused now by this. 1 second. If he's... Right. That's exactly the issue, what I said a minute ago. If the Kohen marries a Grusha, he can't even be called up as a Levi. Okay? So his son can't, right. If the father, right, you're right. If the father married a Grusha or Chalutza, because he himself is okay. No, but he himself also can't really be called up. But really, it's this kid who's called a Halal. He doesn't become a Halal, actually. It's the son who becomes a Halal. So they're saying the Levi. Right, so the son can't get called up as a Levi, okay, and therefore he's like a Yisrael. But if his father's a Kohen, 1 second, who can come Levi? Right, what would happen if you call a Kohen a Har Kohen? So you might, the second guy we're not worried about because he's obviously considered either a Kohen or a Levi because he got the second Aliyah. Now, if he was a Halal, he wouldn't even be able to be called up as a Levi. So therefore, we're not worried about the Gam for this guy. We're only worried about the Gam for the first guy that maybe there was an issue and that's why we're calling someone in his stead. Whereas the Levi, if you call up a Levi Akar Levi, and one gets called up as a Yisrael and one gets called up as a Levi, as you're worried about the Gam for either which one, because even if he's a Mamzer, he could still get called up as a Yisrael. So the second guy, there would still be a cause for concern for Pagam, because he's now getting called up in the third Aliyah is Israel, which would be okay for him. So basically, no matter what, you're going to have an issue on the Levi, either which way, whereas you're not on the Kohen. So you're not worried about the second one, you're only worried about the first one. Okay, so now they want to ask, Ulaman, who are we worried about getting confused? That was our question the first one. Who's going to get confused? Eli Yoshvin. Let's say you're sitting in shul, and there's 7 olim l'torah, and this is why I think it was confusing in the first place, why we're discussing this, right? There's 7 olim l'torah, and there was a Kohen, and then there was a second Kohen, and then it went to Yisrael. So you wouldn't think, oh, the first one wasn't good, because altogether you had 7 aliyot, right? So therefore you know that the second Kohen was called up, you know, out of, that you needed to fill in the spots. But who's the concern of? El aliyotzin. People who might leave shul early. And therefore, okay, people who might walk out before they finish the reading, and they might not notice, that they might think, oh, you were redoing the aliyah. Now, again, you have to ask a little bit, why are we redoing the aliyah? Didn't we move forward, right? We didn't redo the aliyah from the beginning. So first of all, you could answer that there's a few times where we actually repeat, okay, like on Rosh Chodesh, or there's a bit of a on Rosh Chodesh, I'm not sure if you repeat the first. There's some repetition in the aliyot, okay? Like on Chol HaMoed, in Chutz La'aretz, let's say you repeat. There's certain ones where you actually, and there's ones where you say, like in Eretz Yisrael, for example, on Chol HaMoed, you read like the Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you read the Korban, and you read the same thing 4 times. So you wouldn't know if you left early if how many they read in the end. So that's the concern. Okay, fine. We could, you know... We could think about this a lot, whether this really makes a lot of sense or not, but we'll leave it at that. Shalchule b'nei Galila l'Rebbe Chelbo. Acharehen, okay, so we got the first 2. What do we do after that, right? We have 5 Yisrael Aliyah, let's say, on a regular Shabbat. Acharehen mi korim, or whatever, however many you have. If you only have 1, you know, who goes next? Lo hava b'yade. He's stumped, right? He doesn't know. Doesn't know what to say. Atav ashale l'Rebbe Yitzchak Nafcha. So then they ask someone else. Amar lei acharehen korim tamidei chachamim hamimunim parnasim al hatzibur. Okay, tamid chacham who's a leader. V'acharehen tamidei chachamim haruim limnotam parnasim al hatzibur. People who could be appointed, they just didn't get appointed yet, you know, but they have potential. V'acharehen This is an interesting order, the next two, I think. Achareihem b'nei talmidei chachamim, shavotehem emunim parnasim al hatzibur, the sons of the community leaders. V'achareihem rashei knesiot. Okay, the heads of the shuls, okay? I guess the people who deal with the technical things. It's interesting that the children, right, because children, you always know, don't always stay on the same course as their parents, but yet they go before the people who are actually doing something right now, the Rashi Knesiot. Okay, v'chol adam, okay, then everybody. Shalchule b'nei galil rabbi chelbo. Mahu lekrot, now we're going to get on a whole, we get into all sorts of interesting topics today. Mahu lekrot b'chumashim b'beit ha'kneset b'tzibur. Apparently, in those days, they didn't only write Sifrei Torah Shlemim, they wrote Sifrei Torah called Chumashim. Okay, we have a Chumash today, but that's a printed book. They had it on cloth, written like a Sefer Torah, Kehalacha. But it was each book, each of the five books, separately. Okay, maybe it was easier to store them, they were smaller, easier to write them. You could only write one at a time, right? So they had these Chumashim. Can you use that for Kriyat HaTorah B'Tzibur? Again, Lo Hava B'Yadeh, he didn't know. Okay, the same guy they asked the question to. So, Aita Shaila Ele Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. So then they asked him. This time, Lo Hava Biyade. He didn't know either. Ata Shal Be Midrasha. They asked to the Beit Midrash. Upashtua Mehada Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, this is interesting, by the way. The rabbis didn't know, so they asked to the Beit Midrash, and someone said, oh yeah, I learned in the name of so-and-so. You know, sometimes the rabbis don't always know, and you ask the students, and the students have, you know, Mesorot that they've heard. So he says, oh, I learned from Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, who said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Sefer Torah shechasir yiriyah achat ein korim bo. Okay, and therefore, if the Sefer Torah is missing one piece of parchment, right, what do? They always sew different pieces together. So if it's missing one page, you can't read from it. So what does he say? Therefore, a chumash, which is missing four books of the Torah, of course you can't read from it. Then they say, Velohi, but that's not a good comparison. Hata michzer b'miltayu, hachalo michzer b'miltay. That is actually missing something, right? As opposed to, okay, so now you see the students don't always know all the answers, right? He brought this answer, but it's not a great answer because it's the Chumash is a whole book. Yeah, it's missing the other four books, but it's a whole entity, whereas something that's missing a section is obviously more pagum than something that's not whole entirely. Something that's whole in its entirety was never meant to be more than that, and that might be okay. So we still don't know, though. That was just, you know, maybe we could bring proof from here, but then they say we can't. But now we have a psak. Rabbi Rav Yosef Damri Travayu, Ein Korim B'chumashim B'Beit HaKneset, Mishum Kvod HaTzibur. Okay, they say it's a Kvod HaTzibur issue. It's not respectful, and therefore you can't read from a non-whole Sefer Torah. The Rabbi Rav Yosef Damri Travayu, Hai Sefer Aftarta, Asur LeMikra Bebe Shabbat. Okay, now we're going to get into a different issue. Apparently they wrote Klafim with the Haftorahs on them, okay, like a Sefer Haftarot, the way we would have a book of, let's say you print a book of all the Haftarot. So they had a book where they, you know, they wrote on a cloth all the Haftarot. Now what's the problem? Haftarot are not whole sections. They're not whole books. They're not, right? They're parts of bits and pieces.
But Mr. Yeah.
Yeah.
This answer is bothering me because...
Which answer? To
about you can't read from a chumash. You know, there's a question about, well, can you read from the chumash or not? And they're saying...
Right. They're talking about four kriyat ha-torah b'tzibur, right? That's what we're referring to.
But then... But doesn't it almost sounds to me like maybe it's a kila that doesn't have a full Sefer Torah, because otherwise why would they be...
Right, so what do you do if you don't have one? Right, exactly. How do you handle it then if you don't have one? So I think the point is that you should make sure to have one because... Right, and as, again, it's always a double-edged sword. If you allow this, then everyone will write this, you know, they'll use this. There's actually a whole discussion among the post came about what if there's a psul in the Sefer Torah. You're in shul, there's a psul in the Sefer Torah, and there is no other Sefer Torah. So there's a machloket about whether you can actually read from it or not. Right. Now, since it's whole, it's just got some mistake, can you read from it or not? There's a whole discussion about how we paskin in terms of a partial Sefer Torah, a pgam in a Sefer Torah. In terms of this chumashim issue, which you see nowadays, every shul has a Torah, and if you don't, they don't have a minyan.
Right.
Because you can't... Right, they wouldn't read from it. So... It's also preventative, right, to get to this stage. You have to think about it also. If you can find someone to write all five books, then in theory you can find someone to write the whole thing. In theory.
But if you can find someone to write
if for the purchase one, and then you get.
And then you have time later, right, as the year goes on, to purchase another, right? Anyway, okay. So now the Sefer Haftarah. Asur lemikre be Shabbat. You can't use it to read on Shabbat. Now the Mefarshim say obviously not just Shabbat, but any time, right? But Shabbat's the time where they would mainly read from it. Also, you can't read from a book like this because, again, it's not full sections. My time, so now they're going to say, delo nitan li katev. In other words, it's not allowed. There's rules about, and then we're going to, from this, we're going to jump into all sorts of other rules about writing Torah. But there's rules about how you write sections of the Torah, and this is not a proper way to write things, by writing them in parts, okay? And not in order, and, right, it's all against the rules. Marbar av Ashi Amar, l'tutule nami asur, my time ad halochazele l'mikrebe. So he says, not only that, but you can't carry it on Shabbat, because since it's not worthy of being used, therefore it can't be carried on Shabbat, okay? Because what's... This doesn't mean carry in Rashid Aravim. This means even to carry it within shul. Because anything that doesn't have a use is considered mukta. So this doesn't have a use on Shabbat because you can't read from it, so obviously it's mukta. Belohi, but that's not true. Now they say, shari little tule v'shari l'mikre be. You're allowed to do that. How do we know? De Rabbi Yochanan v'rish Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, ma'ayne b'sifra de agadita b'shabta. V'ha, okay, so now they're saying, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish and Ani, this is going to a little bit address your question. Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish would learn from Sifrei Agadata on Shabbat. Okay, now what's the issue? This doesn't have to do with, this isn't Divrei Torah, this is, right, Torah Shabbat Peh, but what's the issue? They would learn them on Shabbat. V'ha lo nitan li katev. And yet these were not allowed to be written. Ela, why were they not allowed to be written? Because we have a concept that, here we're going to get into the fascinating issue about Dvarim Shebal Peh, Iyafshar Lichtov, I forget the exact words, but you cannot write them. Things that were given over Baal Peh, Torah Shebal Peh, all of the Gemara and all that, right? Mishnah, they were never meant to be written down, and you're not allowed to. Now, why would Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish learn from these books that weren't allowed to be written down? So what's the reason? Ei lasot l'Hashem heferu Toratecha. There came a point in history where the rabbi said, if we don't start writing these down, all of Torah is going to be forgotten. And therefore, we have to go against the rules in order to prevent further problems. So therefore, what are we going to say? Hachanami, and this answers your issue, Ani. Kevan delo efshar, ei lasot l'Hashem eferu Torah. When it comes to the Haftarot, there's no other, like, it's going to be too complicated if we require them to write everything, and then every week you have to look through to find where you're up to, what section of the Navi, and you wrote a whole book with everything. It just wouldn't happen. So therefore, they allowed it for that reason. Okay, therefore, they allowed them to write these klafim with the Haftarot on them. Okay, now we're going to get into all, so now we're going to get back to this Eid Lassal Hashem Eferu Torah Techa Nedrim Shebechtav, but before that we're going to get onto this other issue, which is Bayim Inei Abayim Rabba. Ma'o lichtov Megillah L'tinok Lehit Lameba. Can you write one section of the Torah for a child? Okay, a Megillah doesn't mean a Megillah like Megillah Esther. It means, can you write one section of a Torah for a child to learn from, right? Now we're not talking about reading from the Torah in shul. Are you allowed to write sections of the Torah on a cloth? We saw this, by the way. Where do we see it? Who remembers? In Sota. Because they write the section of the Sota. Okay, if you remember, we're going to see it again. Helenia Malka had this tavla where she wrote out the section of the Sota that they use in the Beit HaMikdash for the Kohen. Every time the Kohen had to write the Sota section, so he wrote it out, and then he put it and erased it. So how was he going to remember the words? So there was this...
She dedicated a plaque.
She dedicated a plaque, a golden plaque, okay, with the Sota written on it. So now we're going to see. So can you write this? So now they say, first of all, we're going to get into another famous machloket about how the Torah was actually written. Okay? There's two opinions about how the Torah was written. Was it Megillah, Megillah, Nitzna? Did Moshe write each section as it happened, and then eventually he had a whole Torah and he sewed them all together? Or was it Megillah, Chatuma, Nitzna? Was it written from start to finish, the whole thing? Okay? So they're going to say this question of Megillah L'tinok L'Lamed would be asked according to either opinion. Tibai L'manda Amar Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna and Tibai L'manda Amar Torah Chatuma Nitna. How so? Tibai L'manda Amar Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna, we could still ask the question according to those who say Megillah Megillah, because you could say like this. Kevan de Megila Megila Nitna Kotvim. So since it was given in sections, so you're allowed to write it in sections. Odilma Kevan de Idbak Idbak. Or you could say, even though it was given Megila Megila Nitna, ultimately the whole thing was, you know, glued together, obviously not glued, sewn together, but since it eventually became one book, it was okay. But for the Tinoch, you're not planning to write the whole book, and therefore maybe it's not allowed. Tibai Laman Damar Torah Chatuma Nitna. Kevan de Chatuma Nitna en Kotvim, right? That would be the obvious. Since the Torah was written all one whole thing, therefore we can assume that you're not allowed to write a section. Odilma kevan de lo efshar katvinan. Or do we say, since there's no other way to do it, we're not going to write an entire Sefer Torah for every single kid, so therefore we're going to allow us to write it in sections, even though it was given chatuma. Amar le ein kotvin. Okay, you cannot. Umatam lefisha ein kotvin. Okay, and what's the reason? Because we don't do it right. What's this? Lefisha ein kotvin. Right, I guess because the Torah is not written in that way. Okay, Etive. Now we're going to ask a question. Apiasta tavla shel zahav. Here's Helene Amalka. Sheprashat sotak tuvala. So what do you see? There are situations where you could write a section of the Torah, just a section. Amar b'shem ben Lakish mishum Rabbi Yanai.
There's also tefillin.
Right, tefillin are written in sections. Right,
they were wearing already.
Right, so the tefillin. Yeah, how do you get around the tefillin that it has sections? It's a good question. But that you might say you're not using it as a cloth to learn to read. It's a whole different purpose.
Or a mezuzah.
Right, or a mezuzah also. Right.
You basically don't interact with those.
Yeah. Right, you don't interact with them.
You
maybe
it you put it in. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, it's closed. It's a good question why that's really different. Right, there is an issue of specifically writing it.
It is a question because they're saying the kosher.
Somehow I have a feeling that we're missing the whole historical background that texts were not that available and writing ability wasn't that common.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not discussing that at all, that maybe somebody didn't know how to write the letters and put on the Ketarim properly. I don't think that concerns them here
because there was an expectation that there were people who were knowledgeable about it and were doing it. You're right, it was done much less frequently. But you'd think they'd be more makel because of that, because it's so hard to find scribes to write. But they're not, right? They're being very strict about it. So I'm not so sure. I mean, it could be that there's some historical perspective that's affecting this, but I don't think it's the fact that they were worried about people possibly, you know, writing it not properly.
It's like 1,000 years before printing started. So
The question is really what's motivating to be machmir here, because we're going to see they're going to ask questions, they're going to answer them up, but really there's a question. If Helene had this tavla, and like you said, there's tefillin, there's mezuzah, which they don't bring up. But there are cases where you write parts of Sefer Torah, so what was bothering them to not allow it? That's really the question. And maybe it relates to being that they get into this whole sugya about the whole issue of can you write Dvarim Shebaal Peh, can't you write them? I think they viewed the written word as something holy. And something, once you put it in writing, which maybe also if you look historically, it's also just books were less... Like they didn't have things written as much as we did.
Historically,
right?
There was a resistance to writing things at all.
Right.
Like, look how long it took.
Right. There's a resistance. Even nowadays, there's a resistance. You see among poskim. Some poskim don't write their tshuva because they're worried about, and that's going to lead into this whole thing about the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, about why we shouldn't be writing them down and why they were so concerned about writing them down. And it could be even the sections of the Torah. If you write one section and not the whole thing, maybe you'll take things out of context.
Maybe that's the concern.
They'll think it's the whole Torah. It's almost, you know, very interestingly enough, this happens to us in the Gemara all the time, by the way, where they'll quote a pasuk out of context, right? And if you don't look at the whole context, you don't really understand what they're talking about. So maybe there's also that issue at stake here. Yeah. Okay, so now they're going to talk about this tavla. So it seems they did write parts. So, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Mishum Rabbi Yanai, but Aleph Bet, they wrote it in abbreviations. Okay? They wrote like the first letter of each word. And that way, the Kohen, who basically knew the Parshat Sotah, but didn't remember the whole thing by heart, he'd have it as a mnemonic to remind, you know, as a non mnemonic, but as a way to remind him what the mnemonic isn't a mnemonic, something in your Baal Peh, it's any memory.
It's any way
okay. So, fine. So, you would have it, but Aleph Bet, Rashi Tevot, and that's how they would do it. etive, but that doesn't make sense, because what does it say in the Braita? Keshehu kotev, ro'eh bekotev masha ketuv b'tavla. When he writes it, he looks and he writes what's written in the tavla. It sounds like he writes exactly. Mm-hmm. So they say, no, ema kemosha ketuv b'tavla. It means he writes it like it's written there, meaning he uses it as a basis, but it doesn't mean it was necessarily written. Etive, that's why I said, this question is clearly better than the answers they're giving for it. Etive, kishuhu kotev, here's another source that says it even more explicitly. Ro'e b'tavla, v'kotev masha ketuv b'tavla. This is the same thing, though. Why is it different? Kishuhu kotev, ro'e... it says ro'e b'tavla, v'kotev masha ketuv b'tavla. It adds one word. It seems, anyway, they're going to say again, ma hu ketuv b'tavla. In other words, again, he uses... Oh, no, here's the issue, sorry. Sorry, I didn't read the whole thing. Okay, so start again. Etive, the second etive. Kshu kotev ro'e b'tavla v'kotev masha ketuv b'tavla. And then the verse continues. Ma'u ketuv b'tavla. What does it say in this tavla? Now we're going to see exactly what it says. Im shachav, im lo shachav. It says the words, right? If he sleeps with her or if he doesn't sleep. If he didn't sleep with her, right? The guy she cheated with. So there it says what? That clearly there were words written in full. So what's there going to be their answer? I get a weak one. It's written every few words, like the beginning of each pasuk, it says, im shachav, and then it says the rest rashei tevot. And then im lo shachav, and then it says the rest rashei tevot. In other words, it would have a little bit, and then abbreviation, so that it wouldn't be a text that had all the words of one section written out. Okay, again, the question is much better than the answer. Kitznai. Now we're going to see, there's a machloket tana'im about this. Ein kotvim migila letinok lehit lameba, yuvi'im de'ato lahashlim mutar. Rabbi Yehuda omer, mibreshit ador hamabul, b'torat kohanim ad vayihi bayom hashmini. Now we see a machloket. Let's start with Rabbi Yehuda, because then we'll explain the Tanakhama based on Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that you can write it as long as you write the entire section. Okay, if you finish that whole section, and he gives you some examples, like from Bereshit, interestingly, right, to Dor HaMabul. He sees that as, right, the culmination of the section of Bereshit. Obviously, you can have arguments over, you know, where sections end. Okay, we're from the beginning of Vayikra until you get to Vayihi Bayom HaShmini. Okay, that's one approach. The other approach is to say, no, you can't do it unless you have Da'ato LaHashlim. So, now... If you have da'at lashlim mutar. So the question is, what does this mean? It sounds like if you plan to write a section but finish it to make a whole Sefer Torah out of it. But the Mefreshim explained that it sounds like he's saying no. He agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that if you write a whole section, it's okay. But he says even more so. Even if you're not writing a whole section, but you intend to write the whole section, but you've only written part right now, it's already mutar. Okay? And lashlim means lashlim, the section, not the whole Torah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so we see it's a machloket tana'im whether you can do this or not. And then we can go back and explain the Halei Ni'amaka then based on this, that it was a whole section. And then you don't have to answer all those answers. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi B'na'a. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi B'na'a Torah Rabbi B'na'a. Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. Okay, now we're going to try to posket about this issue. Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna Shene'amar. How do we know this? Az amarti hine bati b'megilat sefer. Okay, it's a pasuk from Tehilim. Okay, and what does it say? Megilat sefer katuv alai. So it's hine bati b'megilat sefer katuv alai. So what does he say? It's like a megilah. Megilah is megilah. Megilah nitzna, right? By sections. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish omer Torah chatuma nitzna. It was written as one whole thing. Okay, so basically we see it's a machlok of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. Shenemar lakach et sefer haTorah hazot. Okay, it sounds like it's a sefer in its entirety. Okay, this is from Dvarim, at the end of Sefer Dvarim. It says, Lekoach et sefer haTorah, hazeh v'samtem oto mitzad arom brit Hashem Elokechem, v'yasham b'chala'en. So it sounds like it was written in its entirety. Obviously, each pasuk can be explained the other way, and that's what they're going to say now. V'idach nami haktiv lekoach, doesn't it say lekoach et sefer haTorah? It sounds like it's the whole thing. So what do they answer? Ha'ula batar de'idbik, right? That was after it was already attached. Then it's viewed as a whole sefer. V'idaf nami hakti b'migilat sefer katuv alai. So what do you do with the fact that it says it's a megillah? Ha'id achola Torah kula ikre megillah. You could call an entire, even though it was written all at once, you could still call it a megillah. Dichti v'yomer elai ma taro'eh. Okay, this is one of the visions of Zechariah. And what does he say? Omer ani ro'eh megillah afa. He sees this megillah afa, which was the sefer Torah. So here you see the Torah can be called a megillah, whether it was Chatuma or Megillah Nitzna, it doesn't matter, right? So therefore, Megillah doesn't mean it was written Megillah, Megillah. Inami, or you could explain, L'chid Rabbi Levi, Da'am Rabbi Levi, Shmona Parshiot Ne'emru B'yom Shukam Bo'am Mishkan. There were 8 Parshiot that were written that are totally out of order. They were written all on the same day, on the day of Hakamat HaMishkan. Which Parshiot? Eluhen, Parshat Kohanim, okay, the Parshat with all the Dinim and the Kohanim and Parshat Emor. Parshat Leviim, that's in Bamidbar when it talks about all the Dinim of the Leviim. Parshat Tmeim, who's Tamei Lameid and who has to be out of the you know, the Machane Leviya, the Machane Shechina, Machane Yisrael. Uparshat Shiluach Tmeim, that's Parshat Shiluach Tmeim. Parshat Tmeim is, those are the people who were Tmeim LaNefesh on Pesach, and they need to know about Pesach Sheni. So on the day of Kama Mishkan, they told them those laws are ready. Parshat Acharei Mot, okay, that's right after his sons died. Uparshat Shduyei Ayayin, that's about the Isurim for the Kohanim to go and drunk. Uparshat Neirot, Bahalot Chata Neirot, Uparshat Para Aduma. Okay, these are all different sections from Bamidbar and Vayikra. So what do you see? They were written all on the same day. So what do you see? That it was written right there, separated. Okay, so therefore, if you say, right, this was all the question on the guy who says Chatuma Nitna, but it's called the Megillah. So it's called the Megillah because different sections were written different times, even though, right, they kind of like went back to them and then filled in. So it was like written as one big thing, but they went back and filled in the spaces after. Okay. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Yes.
This is when they know the Parshiot as we know them, or these are...
These are the Parshiot as we know them in the Torah, that they were written when Moshe wrote the Torah. He wrote them all on the same day and then filled in the spots around them, you know, after. Okay. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Torah, now we're going to get into this whole thing about Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh, what can you write down, what can't you write down. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Torah rov bichtav umi'ut al peh. Most of the Torah was written bichtav and a little bit ba'al peh. Okay, now how can you possibly say this, right? Torah Shebaal Peh is obviously much greater. But what do they mean? When they say bichtav, they don't only mean what was actually written, but they mean all the yugim omidot ha-Torah nidreshet bahem, which then includes a lot more of the Torah Shebaal Peh, goes into the category of called Torah Shebaal Chtav, things that you learn directly from the Chtav, rather than halachot that are derived by all sorts of other means of misored and, you know, things passed down, things that develop, etc. How do we know this? Shenemar, Echtov lo rubei torati kemozar nechshavu. Okay, this is a pasuk from Hosea. What's the pshat of this pasuk? I will write most of the Torah, and yet, right, even though most of it's written, kemozar nechshavu, the people aren't keeping the mitzvot, they are strangers to the mitzvah. For Rabbi Yochanan Omer, we're going to see other interpretations of this pasuk soon, rov al peh umi'ut bichtav. Most of it is baal peh, and much smaller amount of it is written. Shneemar, ki al pi advarim ha'eleh. Okay, what does that mean? What's that pasuk? Okay, look at it. It's Shmot Lamedalid. Vayomer Shama Moshe, Ktov lecha at hadvarim ha'eleh, ki al pi hadvarim ha'eleh karati itcha brit ve'ei Yisrael. Now, what does it mean? Not, right, al pi means because of these things, but it could have said ba'avor, okay? But what did it say? Al pi. Al pi they darshan to say al peh. That the brit that I'm making between you and me is based on the Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, and this is stressing the importance of the Torah Shebaal Peh. You have to remember, by the way, the time period, right? I mean, these are Amoraim, but certainly in the time of the Tanaim, there was a big issue with all the Karaim and the people who wanted to read only Torah Shebaal Bechtav. Okay, and that also has a lot to do with this, about why they wanted to keep it more secret a little bit. You know, it's almost this secret society, not to give it into the hands of people who will misconstrue it. Okay, v'idach nami, so now again we're going to have, what does each one say about the other pasuk? Haktiv echtov lo rubei torati. Hahu itmue kametame. It's a question. It's saying, achtov lo rubei torati kemozar nechshavu? Okay, hello, kemozar nechshavu. Now here's a really interesting interpretation. If I write down most of the Torah, and it'll be a Torah shebichtav, then the Jews are going to be like a zar. What does it mean? They're not going to be unique. It's almost saying that this is what makes the Jewish people unique. That they have this great masoret ba'al peh. That it distinguishes them from all the other nations. That's what this interpretation is saying. If I do harov b'torah, everything written, then they'll be just like everybody else. Which is an interesting perspective. I don't, you know, you can argue with it. Not other other religions also have their own mesorot. But anyway, that's how they viewed it. V'idach nami haktiv ki alpi adrei me'ela. So what do you do with the alpeh? Hahu mishum de tekifei lemigmirinu. There might be less of them, but they're much more difficult to learn. And therefore, that's why I'm korei breed on the dvarim shebal peh. Not because they're more plentiful, but because they're more difficult. It's quality versus quantity. Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmani miturgem neidah Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. K'tiv, it says, k'tov l'cha et hadvarim ha'ele, u'ch'tiv ki al pi hadvarim ha'elu. Ha'ketzad. How do you say on the one hand, you have to write them, on the other hand, it's all bal peh. So, here we have our famous statement. Dvarim shebichtav, i'ata rashai la'omran al peh. Dvarim shebal peh, i'ata rashai la'omran bichtav. Okay, everything has its place. Things that are written have to be written. You can't pass them down orally. Things that are passed down orally can't be written. Okay, you have to, each one has its own unique thing. Dibei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, Eile.
Music that they're saying this in the Gemara, which was not written for, or you know, about Mishnah, not written for so long and then.
Right, well, that's why they're saying it. They're saying these are the rules. Now, in the end, they had to break these rules, right? But these were the basic rules. We'll continue on one more minute and then we'll discuss it a little bit more. Dibei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, Eile. What's this pi advarim ha'ele or k'tov l'chat advarim ha'ele? Sorry, it's k'tov l'chat advarim ha'ele. Which things can be written? Eile atakotev. V'i atakotev halachot. But you can't write down halachot. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo karat brit im Yisrael, lo karat ha'kadosh baruch hu brit im Yisrael, ela b'shvil advarim shebal peh, sh'ne'amar ki al pi advarim ha'ele karati itcha brit ve'et Yisrael. Okay, so now, again, what was concerning them? What's this whole issue about not writing things down? Part of it, in other words, there's this conflict always between writing things down, and once it's written, you see it only as written. And sometimes you misconstrue, right? If somebody explains something, so, like, look at reading the Gemara. You might read it and understand it one way, but, you know, find out that there's Mesorot that understood it a different way. And that you make mistakes sometimes when you rely only on reading. We don't want to, right? On the one hand, they call us the people of the book, right? On the other hand, we're not really people of the book, because the people of the book means, you know, we go by the written word. And there's always been this issue throughout society, you know, throughout history about how much we learn from the books, how much we learn from the rabbis. And it's changed over time. And certain, right, nowadays everybody reads, right? It's all about access to books, right? And now everything's online and everything's accessible and you can read everything and not really need the teacher, right? On the other hand, they're trying to tell you, you still need a teacher and you need to put in a context and have the background to it and not just learn it out of context, just the book, without the Masorah, without the connection. And by the way, this went on for, you know, when the Rambam wrote the Mishneh Torah, people attacked him. How did you put all this in writing? And you didn't give your source material, you didn't give the background, they wanted to burn it. And the Shulchan Aruch, the same thing. People were very angry when the Shulchan Aruch was written. They said, how could you put this in writing like this so simply, as if this is what it's about? You know, and you're missing all the background, you're missing all the other opinions, and that's always been this issue between, if you didn't have the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, we'd be in trouble, right? Those books help us. They help us organize things. They help us understand things better. But they're missing, you know, all the other aspects of it. So there's always this balance between, you know, when you do write, how do you write in a way that includes other things? Like the Shulchan Aruch is a great example, because he wrote the Beit Yosef, which was this commentary that gave all the background and all the other opinions, at least all the other opinions he had seen, not the books he hadn't seen, but it gave all the background to it. But what happened? It was too long a book and too complicated. It didn't get printed together with the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch got printed and spread out all over the world because it was right around the time the printing press was happening, and nobody read the Beit Yosef because it was long and harder to read and harder to understand. So his book got separated from his whole original intent. So you see what happens when, you know, even if you have the right intent when you're writing it, it doesn't always come out that way in the end. So anyway, that's an interesting debate about the whole Tarash B'Chtav. And what obviously happened here was it came time, and it fits perfectly in the whole Tikkun Olam, which is sometimes things have to be done against what you might have thought because, you know, Ein Breira, there's no choice. Okay. We'll do one little section and then we'll stop for today. Ma'arvim b'bayit yashan mipnei darkei shalom. So you do the Eruv in the house that's always been done because of darkei shalom. So now they want to know, what's the reason for this? My time. Ilem amishum kavod v'ha'hu shipura d'havami kara be'rab Yosef who love herself be'rabba, who love herself be'rab Yosef, who love herself be'abaye, who love herself be'rabba. Okay, here we see that if you think it's an issue of kavod, if someone had the kibud that the eruv, the food for the eruv sits in his house, so maybe you can't pass it, but that's not a reason for kavod, because for kavod there was this shofar, that's shipura, is a shofar. There was this shofar that first was in Rav Yehuda's house, then it moved to Rabba's house, then to Rav Yosef, then to Abaye, then to Rava. It moved hands every time someone else, the baton was passed for who was the head of the yeshiva, you know, someone died maybe and moved on, and it got passed from house to house. So what's the answer? It can't be that, because you see if the shofar moved, then we can move the eruv. Ela mishum chashada, what's the concern? We're worried that people might see that you moved the Erev out of his house. Now, what's the Erev? The Erev is food, and it has to be there on Shabbos. So people are worried that maybe he ate the food, he stole it, you know, and that there was a concern that he was stealing it, and therefore they moved it from his house, and we don't want people to start being suspect of other people, and therefore we don't allow it. Okay, tomorrow we're going to get to the whole irrigation thing and who gets the water first, and all different opinions about this, about how it works, and, well, we'll get into it tomorrow.